Now, back to Matt Gurney and Mornings on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Well, a couple of minutes ago, you got to hear two somewhat anxious dads talking about what the new normal is going to be for back to school. Toronto school is opening up again this week, and I know they've been open in different parts of the country at different times, but, Toronto's turn, I guess, so here we go. That was just two dads talking, though, and they were journalists, right? So they could ground their comments in the news, but there's something we touched on at the very end. Why do we send our kids back? We send them back because they need to go. And it's not just for their education, and it's not just so that the economy can get back to work or anything like that. Although those are real concerns. The other concern is, honest, if we're just being honest about this, is coming down to their own best interests. And it's not something we're used to thinking about, the trade-offs between their health and their development, but here we are. I want to bring on an expert in this, someone who can actually walk me through a little bit of the toll of this, because it's been a busy time, and I'm sure it's been a really rapid field that's been developing as well. Dr. Gene Burrison is with the Massachusetts General Hospital. He's an educator there in child and adolescent psychiatry. He's also a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. And doctor, really grateful for your time today. So thanks for coming on. I had just mentioned to a colleague, he and I both live in Toronto, and the elementary schools, after a delay, are opening this week. And he and I had agreed that whether it was online learning or a tutor or homeschooling or whatever, you can replicate a lot of the educational elements of school outside an institution. But schooling, particularly at an elementary school age, is as much about learning how to function in a social environment and with your peers as it is anything else. And that was what I was worried I couldn't replicate for my kids. I don't want to raise my kids in a bubble. I want them to learn how to function in the real world. A lot of parents out there are probably having very similar conversations.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, the social emotional aspects of learning are quite critical, not just for elementary school kids, but for kids at all developmental levels, preschool, school age, high school kids, you know, even college students. It's a critical part of education. And in fact, it may be actually more important in terms of life skills than learning reading, writing, and arithmetic, you know.
Yeah, well, probably. And something I had said, Doc, it's that I can only imagine how many new fields of study and how many future PhD theses are basically unfolding before our eyes right now. This has been an unusual 6 months. From your perch and from your vantage point, what are the early takeaways, to the extent that we can even see them yet? What has this been like for the youth and kids out there?
Well, I think, you know, kids of all ages are struggling to different degrees. I mean, kids who are disadvantaged, who don't have means, don't have siblings, don't have others around, whose parents are out of the house, lose a lot more. I mean, while there's no substitute for kids interacting with kids, you know, three or four-year-olds that are socially distancing with masks on and are just meeting kids for the first time, they have a hard time kind of, you know, navigating those waters. So what I'm trying to say is that even if we bring kids together in real-time situations, we have to be adaptive and creative and flexible, number one. Number two, we have to provide social stimulation as much as we can at home and in the community. We can't just rely on schools. And frankly, I have 11-year-old grandchildren. They're about to go into fifth grade. And one of the things, and they started school, and they're socially distancing. One of the things that they were concerned about is that they couldn't see their friends' faces on the screen, and they really wanted to. We have to remember that as problematic as digital media may be for social-emotional learning, these kids have grown up as digital natives. They're used to FaceTiming. You know, I FaceTime with my 3-year-old grandchildren, and they can see the whole face. So I think what we have to be doing now is looking at the various different ways we can connect socially, emotionally, on the screen, in real time with masks, in the family, and in all sorts of settings.
Well, Doc, for what it's worth, I've had to tell my 7-year-old to stop sending me text messages while I'm on the radio, so I know exactly what you mean. They figure it out very quickly, and they adapt to it very quickly as well.
Yes.
What are we going to do? And I mean, let's be optimists here for a minute, Doc. Let's assume,
sure.
it might be a big assumption, but for the sake of optimism, let's assume no major second wave. Let's assume we were able to get things back to something approaching normal relatively rapidly. What is it going to mean long term for these kids? You know, when guys like you, you know, a generation from now are looking back and poring over the data that we've generated in this period, what do you think we're going to see?
Well, here's the thing. The cool thing about being human and the great thing about the human brain that has 100 billion neurons with 10,000 connections each, which is like a bigger, you know, it's one of the most complex organs in the galaxy. It has what's called plasticity. And the thing about development that's really important to remember is that we don't really lose. We lose some time. We may lose a gap, but development can be recaptured. In other words, if there are gaps, even if there are social emotional gaps, they can be picked up later. So I think for parents and grandparents and all of us that care about our kids and grandchildren, we should, you know, ride this wave. But remember that if something is missing, it can be caught up later. We just have to monitor the gaps in relationships. We have to monitor the gaps in learning. We have to monitor the gaps in social interactions and give kids the opportunity in the future to catch up on them. I mean, let's face it, this is a horrifying situation. But, you know, my mom, who passed away 2 years ago, grew up during the Great Depression and World War II. And there were plenty of relatives and family that were, you know, in war zones and were completely derailed for 4 or more years. And did it leave marks? Yes. Trauma is scars people for a long time. But if there are gaps in development, here's the optimistic point. If there are gaps in development, we can make them up as long as we're vigilant, as long as we're monitoring, as long as we're kind of keeping our finger on the pulse and we're watching out for our kids. I would not worry about losing something forever because I don't believe that that's, I believe that we can catch up.
Doc, let me flip the coin on you here a little bit. And let me ask you kind of the opposite question from a more pessimistic side. Okay. If this does become a more long-term issue, if there is a large second wave, if it takes us years to get to a vaccine or to some degree of herd immunity, what would the smart people be doing now to kind of mitigate that future trauma? I mean, if we were worried that this was going to grind on for a long time, what would we thank our future selves for if we sort of realize now and try to adapt ourselves to now?
Yeah, I think that's an incredibly important point. I think what we have to do is, again, as I was saying before, we as parents, teachers, caregivers have to be flexible and creative and innovative, and we have to plan for all different scenarios. So let's say we plan for, you know, another wave, and let's say we plan for a lockdown, even for a year, let's say. I think there are a number of things that we should be able to, that we should do. We should, number one, control our own anxiety. Because parental anxiety is contagious, right? And kids will pick up on it. So we need to kind of, you know, again, if when you go on the airplane and they say if the pressure drops, put the oxygen mask on yourself first and then help the person next to you, it's what we all need to do. So I think as parents, since kids will pick up on this, we need to take care of ourselves. We need to set priorities. We need to provide structure in the house. We need to kind of be sure that we control our own anxiety. I think we need to keep our kids informed. Ask them what they know. Have frequent conversations with your kids. And again, make it developmentally appropriate. You're not going to have the same conversation with a 5-year-old as you are with a 15 or 17-year-old. But validate their concerns and feelings. Ask what they're worried about. Ask what they're concerned about. You know, be available. I would also provide structure. You know, consider your home as if it were school. so there are certain times that the kids wake up and do one activity and have breaks and have other activities and then have breaks and have screen time. Another important thing is to be prepared to have social contact on the screen. So routinely FaceTiming with peers, with friends, with family, with supports, with community and spiritual leaders, is very, very helpful both for child and parental anxiety. And I would practice methods of self-care. So meditation, yoga, exercise, good diet, good sleep habits, for parents as well as for kids, that's going to be the foundation for being able to withstand something in the long run. And then there are other things like using creative arts to express oneself, watching shows together. There's a lot of stimulation we can do together if we set aside the time to do that. So being prepared in those ways, many ways, I think are things that we could be doing and should be doing now, and setting the stage for kind of ramping it up if we are in a prolonged period of isolation.
Great advice, and good to get it from an expert as well. Puts my mind at ease a little bit. So you've done double duty today. Not only have you been a great interview, you've relieved my parental anxiety. So great to have you here.
I'm delighted.
me too. Doctor, thanks so much for this. You take care of yourself.
Thanks, you too.
All right, all the best. Dr. Gene Burson is an educator in child and adolescent psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital and a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. My guest here on the show.